Welcome back to Spoonful of Sugar. Today's episode is on human immunodeficiency virus, commonly known as HIV. It will be hosted by Alexa Turan, a third-year medical student at Western University of Health Sciences. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
Hey, future doctors, thanks for tuning into Spoonful of Sugar, a podcast made for medical students by medical students to help the medicine go down. My name is Lexi Sharan, and I'm a third-year medical student at Western University of Health Sciences in Oregon. Today, we will be covering human immunodeficiency virus, better known as HIV. I know that I found this topic to be difficult because of the confusing life cycle, all of the surface proteins, lab values, and really just all of it. HIV can be a good way for test writers to test microbiology in a immunocompromised host too, which we will also be covering. Overall, my goal is to cover all of the high-yield HIV topics without getting too bogged down with the minutiae, just to get you through whatever questions are thrown your way on test day. Before we jump in, I just want to quickly mention HIV-1 versus HIV-2. Test writers likely won't have you differentiate between HIV-1 and HIV-2, but I wanted to make some quick notes about them. HIV-1 can really be found throughout the world, while we see HIV-2 being endemic in certain countries in West Africa. But it is important to note that HIV-2 can also be found in other parts of the world as well. Lastly, HIV-1 is transmitted more easily than HIV-2. And we do see that HIV-1 infections progress more rapidly to AIDS compared to HIV-2. So just remember, HIV-1 is more virulent. First, I want to cover some of the basic microbiome content just to give us a strong foundation before moving forward. HIV is normally what we think of as a classic retrovirus. Can you remember the name of the enzyme that is associated with retroviruses like HIV? So that's reverse transcriptase. HIV does have other important enzymes that we will also be covering, but you'll definitely want to remember reverse transcriptase. Reverse transcriptase is a major buzzword for HIV, but do you remember what its role is? So, reverse transcriptase is an RNA-dependent DNA polymerase. So, it reads the RNA template to make DNA. This is really important because it means that viral DNA can become integrated into the host DNA. Do you remember if HIV is enveloped or unenveloped? HIV is enveloped. So remember that HIV is a positive sense, single-stranded RNA virus that is enveloped. It has a diploid genome, which means that it has two copies of the single-stranded RNA genome. It is part of the retroviridae family in the lentivirus genus. Remember, lenti means slow, so you can kind of use that just to help you remember the long incubation. Okay, so now we're going to go into transmission. Can you remember the main mode of transmission for HIV? So the main modes are going to be blood, sex, and the perinatal route. So when we think of blood, that's pretty straightforward. With this, we're really going to think about IV drug use and any needle use in general. And then in terms of sexually transmitted, we know that HIV can be transmitted through vaginal secretions as well as semen. And importantly, it can be transmitted perinatally or through vertical transmission. Okay, so now we're going to dive into the different genes. So this might be a hard one, but do you know the important genes associated with the HIV virus? So the main ones are going to be ENV, GAG, and POL. So first, the ENV gene stands for envelope, and it codes for GP120 and GP41. The GAG gene stands for group antigen proteins, And this gene is going to code for P17, which is a matrix protein, and then P24, which is the capsid protein. The way that I remembered these different numbers, I just remembered 17 plus 7 equals 24. So we have P17 and P24. 17 plus 7 equals 24. And then lastly, we have the POL gene, which codes for reverse transcriptase, integrase, and protease. So a way to remember what the POL gene codes for is a mnemonic called RIP-POL, and this is from First Aid. So RIP, R-I-P, stands for reverse transcriptase, integrase, and protease. And then POL just stands for the POL gene. So RIP, POL. That was a lot of random sounding genes and some random numbers. So I'm just going to kind of do a quick review before we move on. Do you remember what the ENV or envelope gene codes for? That's going to code for GP120 and GP41. Can you remember what the GAG gene codes for? So this is going to be P17, which is a matrix protein, and then P24, which is the capsid protein. And for this, if you want, remember 17 plus 7 equals 24. P17, P24. Okay, and then lastly, what does the POL gene code for? So remember RIP POL, reverse transcriptase, integrase, protease. I wanted to discuss these genes before getting into the life cycle just to give you a bit of a refresher, but don't worry because we will cover them again. Okay, so now we're going to jump into the HIV life cycle. There's going to be a lot of different proteins and enzymes that we talk about, but we will go through each one slowly, making sure to repeat concepts so that hopefully it'll make a little bit more sense. And remember, a lot of what we talk about during the life cycle is going to be important when we talk about therapeutics. First, we're going to be talking about attachment and fusion. Do you remember what type of host cells the HIV virus infects? So HIV infects CD4-positive immune cells. That would include T helper cells and macrophages. So the outer surface of the virus is what is going to come in contact with the cell that it's infecting. When we think about the HIV envelope, there are two important glycoproteins that play a role in attachment of the virus to the host cell. We just talked about these in the previous section. Can you remember what they were? So that's GP120 and GP41. Remember, GP stands for glycoprotein. GP120 is on the viral envelope, and it must bind to both the host's CD4 receptor and the CCR5 or CXCR4 co-receptors, which exist on the host cell. So GP120 is on the viral envelope, and CCR5 and CXCR4 are co-receptors on the host cell. So you can think of GP120 as being the protein that brings a viral envelope and the host cell close together. Then GP41 is the transmembrane glycoprotein that fuses the two membranes together, so that the viral contents can be emptied out into the host cytoplasm. These proteins can be hard to remember just because they are numbers. So this is how I remember them. Use it if you want. So I imagine that you have a 120-foot rope that lassos the host cell and brings it closer. And then you have a 41-foot rope that lassos the host cell even closer so that the viral envelope and host cell can fuse. So you start out with a long rope, GP120, that brings the host cell close, and then you can bring the host cell the rest of the way with the shorter rope, GP41. Okay, so we just talked about how the viral envelope fuses with the host cell, and then how the virus uses its glycoproteins GP120 and GP41 and the host cell receptors to empty the viral contents into the host cell. To wrap up this section on attachment and fusion, now that we are on the topic of these different receptors, Can you remember the significance if an individual has a CCR5 mutation? So if a person is homozygous for a CCR5 mutation, that will confer immunity to HIV. And then if you're heterozygous for CCR5, then it will lead to a slower course of illness. Now we're going to move on to reverse transcription. So once everything is inside the host cell, reverse transcriptase copies two single-stranded positive sense RNA strands from the virus and makes two double-stranded DNA strands. Then the double-stranded DNA enters into the nucleus and integrates the viral double-stranded DNA into the host genome. Do you remember the name of the enzyme that does this? So that's integrase. Integrase integrates the viral DNA into the host's genome. Remember that HIV is what we call a provirus, and essentially a provirus is integrated into the host genome so that it is able to replicate along with the host genome. The fact that HIV is a provirus is crucial because when it integrates into the host genome, there's no way for the host cell to know that it doesn't belong because it is integrated into the host genome. And this is why integrase is so important. Okay, so after that, then the HIV virus uses the host DNA-dependent RNA polymerase to copy the integrated viral DNA. That leads to the production of proteins like P24, reverse transcriptase, GP120, and GP41. This will eventually lead to the creation of a virion that will exocytose from the host cell. Okay, huge congrats on making it through that really dense section. Now we're going to go through some review questions. Can you remember the important proteins that are used for attachment and fusion of HIV to the host cell? So again, that's GP120 and GP41. Remember, GP120 is the protein that brings the viral envelope and host cell close together. Then GP41 is the transmembrane glycoprotein that fuses the two membranes together so that the viral contents can be emptied out into the host cytoplasm. GP120 and GP41 are part of the ENV gene, which again stands for envelope. And remember that the host cells are CD4 positive cells like T helper cells and macrophages. Can you remember the other important genes associated with the HIV virus? So we just mentioned ENV, and then we have GAG and POL. Remember that GAG is going to code for P17 and P24. P17 is the matrix protein, and P24 is the capsid protein. And then finally, we have the POL genes, which code for reverse transcriptase, integrase, and protease. Remember, RIP POL. So once the double-stranded DNA enters into the nucleus, it integrates the viral double-stranded DNA into the host genome. Do you remember the name of the enzyme that does this? So that's integrase. Remember that integrase integrates. Okay, and then finally, what will it mean if a patient is homozygous for a CCR5 mutation? So remember, if you're homozygous, that will confer immunity. And then if a patient is heterozygous for the CCR5 mutation, it would lead to a slower course of illness. Now, I just wanted to briefly touch on HIV lab tests. So there's going to be different lab tests depending on what we want to know exactly. Can you remember some of the ways we diagnose HIV? For diagnosis, we will use HIV-1, HIV-2, antigen antibody immunoassays. These detect viral P24 antigen capsid proteins and IgG antibodies to HIV-1 and HIV-2. I remember P24 because I just think about a lab result taking 24 hours to get back. Obviously, we know that's not always true, but it's just the way I like to remember that P24 is associated with a specific lab result from an immunoassay. So P24 takes 24 hours. Okay, now if we want to test viral load, we will want to detect the amount of viral RNA in the plasma. Can you think why testing a patient's viral load might be important? So testing viral load is crucial while monitoring a patient's response to drug therapy. Okay, and then finally, we have an AIDS diagnosis. Can you remember the lab value associated with the diagnosis of AIDS or acquired immunodeficiency syndrome? So a CD4 less than 200 will indicate an AIDS diagnosis. And remember that AIDS can be clinically diagnosed if a patient presents with an AIDS-defining condition, which we will be talking about in a few minutes. All right, so now I want to jump to the time course of untreated or undiagnosed HIV infections. So I think you're unlikely to get super specific questions regarding the exact next steps in an HIV infection, but test writers will likely incorporate some of these concepts in the question stem that will point you in the direction of a patient with HIV. So it's going to be important to understand the clinical picture. I want to do a quick run through of what an untreated HIV infection and progression to AIDS would look like. Before I get into it, first aid describes this progression as the four Fs of an untreated HIV infection. So the first F is flu-like. The second F is feeling fine, which is the latent period. The third F is falling count, which stands for falling CD4 count. And the fourth F is final crisis. Now we will walk through this in some more detail. So the initial HIV infection begins as a local infection without symptoms for about 10 days. The CD4 count will likely be relatively stable at this point. Once the virus moves from a local infection to the blood and circulation, there is a higher viral load. So with this increased viral load, you will see more CD4 cell infection and therefore a lower CD4 count. And there will be an immune response with the increase in HIV antibodies. Can you remember the symptoms associated with this acute phase of HIV infection that we just described? So that's going to be flu-like illness. And like we said, the viral load will be highest during this time period. So after this initial surge of the virus and host immune response, there is a so-called recovery, but it's more of like a pseudo-recovery period. The antibodies can kind of keep the virus under control, but it can never entirely clear the virus. So during this latent phase, there is no symptoms, but the patient is infectious. Eventually, the CD4 count will continue to decline long term. And as we know, if the CD4 count goes below 200, that qualifies the patient as having AIDS. This is when we will start to see opportunistic infections, which we will cover in a bit. Okay, so let's recap the four Fs again. Can you remember what they are? So the first F is flu-like. Remember, this is the acute illness we just described. The second F is feeling fine, which is the latent period, so the patient will not have symptoms. The third F is falling count, which stands for falling CD4. And then the fourth F is final crisis. Flu-like, feeling fine, falling count, final crisis. Now we're going to cover infectious diseases associated with HIV positive patients. So if someone has a weakened immune system, they're going to be more susceptible to much more than someone who has a completely intact immune system. There's a lot of these HIV associated illnesses, and I'm not sure it'd be worth going into a lot of detail about each one, but I do think it'd be worth mentioning most of them and at least going through the high-yield ones. So before I begin, just to jog your memory, can you think of some of the HIV or AIDS-associated illnesses? First aid breaks down the diseases based off of the CD4 count, so we're going to review them like that too. So first, we're going to discuss a CD4 count under 500. So with this, we're going to have Candida albicans in the form of oral thrush and EBV in the form of oral hairy leukoplakia. So both oral hairy leukoplakia and Candida albicans might be presented similarly in questions that might mention a white patch in the mouth. Can you remember how you might differentiate them clinically? The big hint they'll give you in a question stem like this will be that oral thrush is scrapable white plaque and oral hairy leukoplakia will not be scrapable. So moving on, we might also see HHVA in the form of Kaposi sarcoma. Can you remember what Kaposi sarcoma might look like clinically? Remember, it's a form of cancer that forms in vasculature, so a question stem might mention pink, brown, or purple lesions on the face, upper extremities, mouth, digestive tract, or other locations as well. And then finally, we have HPV in the form of squamous cell carcinoma, commonly at the anus, cervix, or oropharynx. Okay, now moving on to CD4 count under 200. So with this, we might see histoplasma capsulatum in the form of cough, dyspnea, fever, vomiting, or diarrhea. We might see the JC virus in the form of multifocal leukoencephalopathy, pneumocystis jirovecii in the form of pneumocystis pneumonia, and then finally dementia. And then finally, moving on to a CD4 count under 100. With this, we might see Aspergillus fumigatus presenting with hemoptysis and pleuritic chest pain, Bartonella species with bacillary angiomatosis, Candida albicans with esophagitis, CMV with colitis, retinitis, esophagitis, encephalitis, or pneumonitis, Cryptococcus neoformans presenting with meningitis, Cryptosporidium species with chronic and watery diarrhea, EBV, B-cell lymphoma, Mycobacterium avium with nonspecific symptoms like fever, night sweats, weight loss, or focal lymphadenitis. And then finally, Toxoplasma gondii with a brain abscess. Okay, that was a lot to review, but my goal with that was just to jog your memory so that if you see a question stem that mentions one of these, you're going to keep the immunocompromised state in the back of your mind. The last section I want to get through is HIV therapeutics. Approaching the therapeutics can be a bit intimidating, but remember that a lot of this will be based off of what we've already discussed with HIV's viral structure and life cycle. I'm not going to touch on every drug name because there's a lot of them, but we're going to walk through each class of antiretroviral therapy to help you mentally organize each class. Do you remember how many medications are normally suggested for antiretroviral therapy? It's recommended that 3 drugs are used. 2 NRTIs, or nucleoside reverse transcriptase inhibitors, as well as an integrase inhibitor. Do you know why it is suggested to use this many? So 3 drugs are used to prevent resistance. Do you remember what guides and individualizes antiretroviral therapy for patients? That would be drug resistance testing. Okay, so now let's get into the different classes. First, we have nucleoside reverse transcriptase inhibitors, or also known as NRTIs. These drugs that are either nucleotides or nucleosides will inhibit reverse transcriptase. Do you remember some of the names of the drugs in this class? So that would include abacavir, emtricitabine, lamivudine, tenofovir, and zidovudine. This is a hard one, but do you remember which one are nucleosides or nucleotides? So tenofovir is a nucleotide and the rest are nucleosides. And you can remember that because tenofovir starts with a T, so tenofovir nucleotide. Next, we have non-nucleoside reverse transcriptase inhibitors, also known as NNRTIs. So these bind to reverse transcriptase at a different site than the NRTIs. Can you remember any of the drug names in this class? So for these, we have deliviridine, efavirenz, and nevirapine. Next, we have integrase inhibitors. So these drugs inhibit HIV integrase so that the HIV genome cannot be integrated into the host cell. These are a bit easier to remember because all of them have tegravir in the name. So that would include bictegravir, dolutegravir, elvategravir, and raltegravir. Now moving on to the protease inhibitors. The protease inhibitor is pretty straightforward. They inhibit protease. Can you think of what genes specifically these drugs would block? So remember, that would be the POL gene because the POL gene codes for protease. All of these drugs also end in navir. So those would be atazanavir, darunavir, lopinavir, and ritonavir. First Aid has a good way to remember this, and it's navir tease a protease. So never tease a protease, navir tease a protease. Okay, lastly, we have entry inhibitors. And so there's just a few drugs for this. That includes enfurivatide, which binds to GP41 to inhibit viral entry, and then maraviroc, which binds to CCR5 on the surface of T cells to inhibit CCR5 and GP120 from interacting. Okay, now for a quick review. So the first class of drugs we talked about were NRTIs, and remember that these are either nucleotides or nucleosides that will inhibit reverse transcriptase. Remember that tenofovir is the nucleotide and the rest are nucleosides. Next, we discussed NNRTIs, which also bind to reverse transcriptase, but at a different site than the NRTIs. Integrase inhibitors obviously inhibit integrase, and remember that all of those have tegravir in the name. Then we have the protease inhibitors that end in navir. Remember, never tease a protease. And then finally, the entry inhibitors that bind to GP41 or CCR5. Remember that the concepts for antiretroviral therapy are probably the most important rather than remembering every single name of all of these drugs. And hopefully this gave you a good jumping off point in case you do need to know all the names for an in-house exam. Really, truly, don't be afraid to listen to this episode again. I know that I listened to Spoonful of Sugar episodes 2, sometimes 3 or 4 times before I felt comfortable with this information. Remember, you're so smart and so capable, and you definitely got this. If you found this episode helpful, please subscribe to our podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please visit our website at spoonfulofsugar.org and post them under the links for this episode. Medical school is hard, but you aren't alone. Good luck with studying, and remember, if you ever have an SOS moment, Spoonful of Sugar is always here to help the medicine go down.